Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio as we roll along on a Wednesday on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. As we've been talking about the halfway point of the NFL seasons and some things that worked and some things that did not work, as we sit here and look about teams. Listen, the thing about the NFL that I like is that there are going to be circumstances like the Denver Broncos that go out of the predictability range. This league is like any other sport. Sometimes a free agent signing produces gangbusters, and sometimes it doesn't quite result in what you're looking for. We've seen in the NBA sometimes with super teams. We think the Brooklyn Nets with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and James Harden are going to run through the East, and it doesn't even last. Right? They can't even make it through and get to a point where they are going to be consistently fighting for championships. And sometimes a super team in the NBA doesn't even win a title in its first go around, like LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. And sometimes a quarterback in the National Football League, like Russell Wilson, just doesn't put on a brand new uniform and do wonderful things. And sometimes they do wonderful things. But that's the unpredictability about it. Now, again, I always look at this is, hindsight, again, always 2020. But I always look and say, when people are saying, well, nobody believed in the Seahawks, how dare they not believe in the Seahawks? Why would we have believed in the Seahawks? That's my biggest question. And for those of us who thought, for example, that Denver, because of their good defense and now Russell Wilson, were going to be a playoff-level team, and that didn't pan out, tell me why it wouldn't have panned out based on what we kind of know. Did people really think Russell Wilson was going to be this awful? Last year, he was actually pretty good, right? There was a conversation about getting some MVP votes, and then he got hurt. Nah. But the reality of it is that that's what makes some of these things so great about this league, is that there isn't a Vanderbilt where you just go, well, every now and then they might make a bowl game, but they're never, ever, ever going to threaten you. You put the pieces together, it can work. I'll be honest with you. One of the teams I'm kind of disappointed in, to be honest with you, is Jacksonville. I didn't think Jacksonville would make the playoffs, but I certainly didn't think Doug Peterson would put them in the same situation where their record was eerily similar to all of the years in which they were terrible. I thought Peterson would kick it just enough to make you feel like something was brewing. Something's not quite brewing. Likewise, I thought Josh McDaniels in his second go around as head coach would be something great for Vegas.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call. Latest on Brittany Griner in Russia. She's off to a penal colony.
See ya.
Bye. Yeah, I'm not going to see her again.
No. I feel horrible.
I do too, but I don't know what to make of this. I do not know what to make of this story, to be honest with you.
I mean, I often wonder, too, are they kind of making an example out of her? Like, did they go above and beyond for throwing the book at her? Like, if a normal Russian got caught with the amount of, weed oil she had?
Right.
Would they be getting the same punishment?
Would they be getting the same? Yeah, is she a political prisoner?
Right.
Meaning they're amplifying the normal charge because of who she is and a play.
But maybe this is just Russia's way of dealing. I don't know.
I know I'm dabbling I'm going to dabble into politics here, and I don't want to, but here's my problem.
Well, it's a political Wednesday.
Yeah, it's a political Wednesday. Sure, why not? I want her to be home because I don't want Americans, I don't want Americans in foreign prisons, but I don't want to give up the arms dealer. Does that make sense? Like, that makes me kind of cringe. Like, the big arms dealer that we have, I don't know if I want to give him up for, it would be Paul Whelan, too, and he's got family, so I don't know. It's a complicated situation for me, because I don't like that we could give up real killers, like real
bad people.
What's
his nickname again?
Oh, what was his nickname?
The murderer of something?
Yeah, what was his nickname? Golly, that's funny that you mentioned that. But anyway, that's what there she's now. Here's the problem.
She's off to a penal colony in Russia. And before you start equating all the things that prisoners in this country get to do with their lawyer and get to have with their lawyer, remember, she's over in Russia. She just got shipped to a penal colony, and her lawyer there has no idea where she went.
Yep.
No idea. Their family doesn't know where she is. Her lawyer doesn't know where she is. They don't even have to be told that. They can put her anywhere they want, and they can leave her there, and that's it. They don't need to. They're not gonna. They don't even have to tell them. Oh, she's over in this town, or she's in this one, or she's over here. We have zero idea where she is, and maybe they will tell her. But as of right now, they haven't told her.
Well, it's like you and I said during a break when we were talking about this. Our first thought was like, oh, they shipped her to Siberia.
Yeah, right?
And you know what I always think of, like the prison in Siberia? I do not remember what Star Trek movie it was, but it was the one where like Kirk was thrown in jail in a Klingon base that was...
I think that was Star Trek 6.
Yeah, so you know which one I'm talking about.
Yes.
Where it's just frozen, icy, conditions looked just terrible.
And the punishment was that you got thrown out in like your underwear and
right.
You just froze to death instantly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what I picture where she got sent to.
Yeah.
That's a prison in Siberia, I believe.
She's going to a work camp. She is going to a work camp, a forced labor penal colony in Russia, and nobody knows where she is. The lawyer doesn't know and the family doesn't know. That's crazy.
I don't think she's doing a Longest Yard remake where a Russian warden of a prison is like, I need her for my basketball team, my prison basketball team.
The New York Post has pictures of her, like her last moments of freedom when she was putting her luggage on the surveillance machine, the X-ray machine. And they show her just kind of hanging in there, hanging out, getting her stuff looked at. And there's one guy going through all of her stuff. And that's the last thing. That's it. They're scanning her bag, looking through her bag. And then that was it. That's all she wrote. And now she's off to a penal colony. Unbelievable. But... it's weird. It's a weird story. I know as women's college basketball has started and her legendary status in the women's college basketball and professional basketball world, you're going to hear more people talk about this, but this news that she's off to a work camp is going to make even people more put the pressure and squeeze on the government
now,
to try to get her out of there.
Will we get to a point where we're not thinking about it? I mean, I know on a day to day, you brought it up today, and I was like, man, I haven't really thought about her in a while.
You know what? I brought it up because it was in the news.
But we're already getting to that point day to day.
This happened in February. We're almost a year, in a couple months, we're almost a year away from her.
Yeah.
She went there just before the war in Ukraine.
Yep.
Yeah, man, oh, man. So, but yeah, it's, you know, outside of a couple of basketball players mentioning it when they have a microphone. Who is there? Anybody fighting for her? Is there anybody like in Washington talking about
sure,
it? Like, is there Bill Richardson? Is he still doing stuff, or did he go? Well, it's the best I can do.
Sure her wife is trying to do something.
No, I mean somebody prominently.
Oh yeah, They're probably looking at it now,
when Steph Curry grabs the mic and goes, "Free BG, free BG." Is he doing that after every game? Is he making phone calls, or did he just do that because? That was a moment where he got a microphone and was like, why not? I'll just throw it out there.
Well, because it was prominent in the news at that time.
Right, right.
So, now, it's not that prominent. I mean, maybe you hear inklings of it today.
Yeah.
Because, the news comes out that she got shipped to a penal colony and nobody knows where she went to.
That's the creepiest thing. That to me is the creepiest thing, is the idea that...
Yeah, because Russia's a pretty big place.
We are so accustomed... it is. And we are so accustomed to... having so many rights as a prisoner, an accused prisoner, even a convicted prisoner, right? That there are so many rights that your lawyer is supposed to have, your family, you're supposed to have. And this, it doesn't exist. Like her lawyer could go, we'd like to know where she is. Well, we're not going to tell you. And that's it. That's the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
That's the end of the conversation. There's no, well, I'll go to your boss. No, trust me, my boss ain't going to tell you.
No, I mean, we're under the assumption that, she's getting three meals a day.
Right.
She's sleeping at least on some sort of mattress with a blanket.
Exactly. No, exactly. Exactly. And and who knows what they're making her do? Crush rocks? Build cars? Like, I have no idea what they're doing over there.
Yeah. We don't know what they're doing. That's, I mean, it could be, you know, she could be just like harvesting potatoes, I guess.
Who knows? So, nevertheless. All right, so I was talking in the last hour about some things that in the off season we were kind of high on and whatnot, and I brought up the coaching, and I brought up Nathaniel Hackett, and as we talked about this before, I think we've touched on it a couple times this season, the fact that Josh McDaniels isn't doing well, but a lot of the attention in the country had been on Nathaniel Hackett. So if the American football press was leaning towards a new coach to sort of point the finger at and go, what is he doing that? It was Nathaniel Hackett. He didn't manage the clock very well. He didn't manage his offense very well. It was right off the bat on a nationally televised game. And because Russell Wilson and the Broncos were an attractive enough nationally televised team because of their acquisitions, it almost magnifies every mistake that he's made. And when national broadcasters are pointing to the guy in the booth that was the special advisor that he had to hire to help him manage things a normal coach would manage, you can get overlooked when you're not doing your job in Las Vegas like Josh McDaniels. Now, if Nathaniel Hackett wasn't hired, and let's just say for whatever reason the Broncos went, Vic Fangio, you get to stay on one more year, maybe the attention would have focused on McDaniels, because McDaniels had everything that you'd think the media would love to salivate over if he was failing. A guy that was very, very arrogant in his first go around, not only locally, but nationally as well. And everybody knew it. Fired in a small, very, very small, but significant to the owner scandal in Denver when he videotaped the San Francisco 49ers in London, creating a smaller version of Spygate, but nevertheless, Pat Bowlen didn't want to put up with it. Just the fact that he comes from the Patriots, right? Just yet another Patriots guy that's trying to be another coach in this league when so many of them couldn't do it. Here's Josh McDaniels getting another run and taking over a playoff team where Rich Bisaccia really shouldn't have been let go in the first place, to be honest with you. Taking over a very rocky situation, going 7-5 and getting the team to the playoffs, he probably deserved another run at that head coaching job. But McDaniels became attractive enough as he's gotten older, more experienced. So that should have been the individual that the NFL media was like, look at Josh McDaniels, man. He's out of the gate. He's got Devontae Adams and this Derek Carr and this team that made the playoffs, and they're not even winning games. It's because they didn't look all that bad when they were losing. Whereas the Broncos, they looked not only silly, you could take highlights and just play the bam, 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 like Benny Hill music underneath it, and you would laugh. It's laugh out loud funny. But then it comes to, on the flip side of that, Brian Daboll is getting tremendous amount of love because he took a 4-win Giants team with Joe Judge having no idea how to coach, managing terribly the offense, making excuses, blaming everybody but himself. And that situation, they get rid of him. They get rid of Dave Gettleman. They bring in a new GM. They bring in a guy that's had success as a coordinator in Buffalo. And the Giants are 6-2. And everybody's all high and mighty on that and how great. And he deserves all the accolades because that's an amazing accomplishment. Then you've got Minnesota, a good football team. Zimmer wasn't exactly the most popular guy in the room. But now Kevin O'Connell comes in and there's a breath of fresh air that Kirk Cousins is feeling, that the team as a whole is feeling, and they're 7-1. And so there's a lot of things in this crazy way that we evaluate good and bad that get into the equation. There were 10 head coaches that were hired in the offseason, 10. And some of them, like Nathaniel Hackett, Josh McDaniels, are high-level failure, high-level. But did anybody really think Matt Eberflus was going to turn things around in Chicago? And as much as we like Doug Peterson and our good friend Eitan Shander thought he would be coach of the year, the Jaguars were still a couple of pieces away from being a real contender.
I'm still holding out hope for Doug.
I'm kind of hoping. I think he's going to get the Shad Khan long tenure to figure it out.
Yeah.
Right? That Urban Meyer didn't get because Urban Meyer blew chance after chance after chance.
Well, he was kicking players, so.
But whether it was Gus Bradley or Doug Marrone, Shad Khan is not a knee-jerk reaction type of head coach. I mean, owner. He doesn't just fire your head coach. He goes, no, there's a long plan here in place. Stability is what I want, and Doug Peterson seems like a good, stable guy. But Mike McDaniel is getting high praise, what did Mike McDaniel? Mike McDaniel and Daniel inherited a whale of a team and an organization that is giving him all sorts of tools. Kevin O'Connell's getting no run, as we mentioned earlier. So some of these coaches coming into these situations, being the brand new head coach, some of them are just steady. Just keep the ship, you weren't that good. We changed coaches. We're not expecting you to be all that great, right? So Lovie Smith. Is anybody criticizing Lovie Smith in Houston? You tell me, is
Sports
Radio screaming that Lovie Smith's not doing a good enough job with this talentless football team?
Yeah, because the finger always gets pointed at, who's on this team. Like, right. Nobody can name any players on this team.
Exactly.
The same names are always brought up. That's Damian Pierce.
People always
butcher the quarterback. I still butcher the quarterback's name.
Right. Davis Mills.
Yeah,
Mills Davis.
I always want to call him Davis Sims.
I have called him David Mills a few times in his early existence. I've learned to correct that. But I remember when he first came into this league, I kept calling him David Mills for a while.
Yeah.
I thought that's just what his name was.
I always go David Sims because isn't that that was the character in Tim Cup.
That's right. That's right. David Sims is American. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So I always call him that. Which doesn't make any sense because that's nowhere near his name.
Back to my point. There's another team that's really struggling beyond their expectations. Really struggling. Does anybody even say the name Todd Bowles in Tampa?
No.
No, it's Tom Brady. That's who you're pointing to.
Yeah,
that's who everybody's pointing to.
You're always pointing your finger at a Tom.
Right? Exactly. Does anybody even know Todd Bowles is the coach there? It's never on what Todd Bowles is or isn't or what he's doing or what he's not doing. The problem is, hey, guess what, Tom Brady? Why are you losing three games in a row? Whatever it is. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue with his wake-up call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. did you ever see the Beastie Boys, the Apple documentary, if you will, that they had on them?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
I need to see it because, I've talked about this before. I have a bad taste in my mouth with the Beastie Boys.
I saw
the Beastie Boys in concert and it left me unsatisfied.
Oh, that's too bad.
Because I think they were a little hammered.
Oh, yeah.
And so basically what happened is I don't ever expect them to play all their hits.
Right.
But, when you see a band of that magnitude, you expect some of the hits to be played.
Yeah, that's kind of where you go.
They played one song I think it was Intergalactic Planetary or whatever that song is called. And I'm like, I like the song, but I'm not, oh, my God, this is it. And then I remember they started to play Brass Monkey, and I got really excited, and someone forgot the lyrics or was too hammered to remember the lyrics, and then freestyled for the rest of the show, mixing in political rants all the way through, and I'm like, this is not what I signed up for.
Yeah. So they had Mike D and Ad Rock. They were on stage, and they were doing showed video. They were telling their story as 50-year-old guys now and talked about how they came together and how MCA was so smart. He was way smarter. He was the guy that could see the big picture. Those two, he was like, we just wanted to party, but Ad Rock, he knew where we were going and MCA knew where we were going. One of the things is when you get older, you have a lot more perspective on what you did. We all know we were stupid when we were younger. We did dumb things when we were younger, and we could take certain things back. But they made a heartfelt apology for the song Girls. They said, we blew that. We should have never wrote that.
God.
Terrible song. Girls to do the dishes, to clean up my room. He's like, that's embarrassing. We were young. Yeah. We should have wrote that.
No, it's a terrible, terrible song.
It's a terrible song.
I I guess, regrettably, if I'm going to go down this pathway, I think I know all the words.
I know all the words to it, too. That's what I was saying. I know all the words to it. So, yeah, so it was kind of that one. But they talked about their rise and who screwed them over. And you know what? I hate to say this. I have no musical talent at all. Zero. I can't play an instrument. I tried. I can read music because I took trumpet lessons for a while, so I'm glad I actually went through that. But I have no – but is there been anybody – and I challenge anybody, has there been any musician that ever went, you know, I had a nice 25-year career. And I'll tell you right now, every single record executive I ever met was awesome. Everybody treated me correctly. Nobody screwed me over. Every deal was fair and square. Everybody lived up to the lines of the contract perfectly. We never had any issues. I never had to call my lawyer once. Has anybody been able to do that in the history of music? I bet you Beethoven was like, they take 1 cent of that royalty, I'm going to go crazy. Like, it feels like
ever since. Beethoven ever went, it's like, I know they're talking about me behind right? in front of my back.
Exactly, exactly. You know, Mozart and Beethoven are hanging around going, listen, man, you got to get the, you got to get the right deal, man. You got to make sure you got to sign this sort of situation where they get this and you get this, but you get the royalties on this side.
Beethoven's going, like, you do six shows a night. Mozart's like, no, come on. I produce like, I work maybe two nights a month at most.
I saw Billy Corgan on Joe Rogan's podcast talk about being able to buy a Porsche with cash, but then describe the music industry as one of the most horrific institutions we have in this country. In the same segment.
If there is a musician out there that has, that has no issues, I imagine it would have to be in country music.
I don't know. Is it? I don't know. Do we have any evidence for that, or we just think that's just the way it is?
I'm trying. I
think Reba McEntire would agree with that.
No, Dolly's probably even has her fair share.
I bet you
of
Dolly's
issues.
Like, you don't understand. Oh boy, oh boy.
You know who it is? I'll tell you. You know who probably has had no issues with music with their age? Well, maybe not. I don't know. I was going to say Fish, the band Fish.
Maybe, yeah.
Because maybe they just don't care.
Because it's hard to get to where you want to go without help, and in order to get help, no one ever does it for free. Do you know what I mean? That's like, what's funny? I there was a period of time where I was watching like videos of people who were in prison, because I'm deathly scared. I'm petrified of prison. I swear to God, like my biggest nightmare is going to jail for a crime I didn't commit, like Andy Dufresne. Like, I don't think I would have been able to tunnel my way out of a prison if I was Andy Dufresne. I would just probably die. But I remember a guy saying when you get to prison, the moment somebody comes up to you and goes, hey, man, oh, man, you need a pair of socks. Don't worry. I got some for you. Don't worry. I take care of you. Never take what they give you because they're not giving it to you for free. Never. Never. Somebody says, oh, man, you're hungry. I got a candy bar. I'll give it to you. Don't worry about it. Never. It's the same thing. I got to think it's the same thing in the music industry. You're a garage band. You're playing. You're doing some shows. People come up to you and go, yeah, I like your show, man. You know what? I think you'd be doing something. I'll tell you what. I'll set up a meeting for you. Don't you'd have to take it, but that guy's got his hand in the cookie jar too. Everybody in the process has got their hand in the cookie jar. It's got to be like you want to. It's like what did AC/DC say? Right? It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll.
Yeah,
getting ripped off, underpaid, getting sold secondhand. That's how it goes playing in a band. Like, it's got to be that way all the way through the process until you get to like where you can legitimately make your own deals and handle your own business. But to get there, you probably sacrifice everything, all your money, getting ripped off constantly.
See, I just Googled, has any musician never complained about their record label?
Is that a Googly thing?
No, I Googled it and it didn't pop up.
Oh, okay.
But you know what did pop up?
What?
First article, 15 times rappers have fought to leave bad contracts. How about this? Musicians versus record labels, 14 famous feuds.
I know. No.
13 great feuds between artists and record. I have nothing.
There's
nothing.
Never a guy that's like, the entire process was pleasant. They took care of me every step of the way.
Earlier this year, there was even a TikTok trend complaining about record labels.
Oh, goodness gracious. All right. More college football when we come back. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. We'll be right back.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
So Philip on Twitter, so if you'd be Andy when it came to prison, would that mean Ron Culver would be red? Yeah, I'd like to think so, that if I went to prison, if you and I were in prison, you would be the red character that was the calming influence.
Yeah, I would just know ahead of time now after seeing that movie what I would say to the parole board.
Then he wrote, hashtag best movie ever. Shawshank Redemption is one of the best movies.
It really is.
It really is amazing. It's just, it's an incredible movie. It's rewatchable. It's enjoyable. The acting is great. The lines are good. It's a great movie. Great movie. But I would not
a good
last.
Ending. I mean, and it's not a far-fetched ending either.
No, that's right. That's right.
It's not unrealistic that, you know, a guy breaks out of prison and the first thing he does is, like, just heads to Mexico.
Yeah.
Because you also have to, I mean, you know, think about the timing, because he was, this is like supposed to be like the 60s, 70s. So it would be easy to hide away in Mexico and live the rest of your life there.
I wouldn't make it, man. I would be the guy that would be screaming on the first night, not calm and collected.
The new fish.
I would be the new fish. That would be me, man. I'm telling you. I don't know. I don't have the stomach for that. That's awful. But that, you know, there's a conspiracy, not conspiracy theory, but there's one of those, you know, movie theories that come around. What are those called? They're not conspiracy, but they're like, there's a group of people that believe it's really this, that Andy Dufresne actually is guilty of the murder.
Oh, yeah. I have seen that.
Where the threat is, you don't really get any real solid evidence that he didn't do this.
Yeah.
Like, you know. Right, you just have this sort of hearsay telephone game thing that one of the prisoners brings to the table. So there's never really any evidence that he didn't do it. And then as you watch him sort of manipulate everything around him, it's very much like a Kaiser Soze in The Usual Suspects, where it's like, in the end, it's like he played it all out the way it was supposed to play. Like this guy, innocent, but he knows he's guilty, but he knows. All right, I'm good.
Usual Suspects, another great movie.
Another great movie, yeah. But that they say that that's why he was, to sort of connect the two movies, the theory is that Andy Dufresne, that's why he's so calm on the first day when he's in prison and he doesn't freak out. Because like Agent Kuyon said in Usual Suspects, do you know how you spot a guilty man? Bring everybody into a jail. The one who's sleeping is your man.
Yep.
Right? Because he's let his guard down. So the theory is the same applies here, that while that guy was freaking out in prison because he thought he was innocent, Andy Dufresne knew he was guilty and was like, all right, they got me, but they don't have me for long. I'll get out of here.
Quick question for you, and this is completely off topic because you brought it up, or we were talking about it. Is The Usual Suspects rewatchable?
Hard to rewatch it. I struggle to rewatch it. I've tried it from start to finish. I will pick it up.
Pick up certain scenes.
I will pick up scenes as it's on. I'll be like flipping through it. I'm like, all right, I'll watch it. Because there are certain scenes I like. There are certain moments in the movie I like.
The lineup scene.
The lineup
by far
scene
one of the
is
best
really good.
Scenes in movies.
Yeah, it's really good.
Find out it's all ad-libbed.
Yeah, no doubt. Absolutely. But you're trying to find the clue. You're trying to see if you could have spotted it all the way through, and it's kind of not. I don't know. It's hard
because once you know the ending, it's kind of hard to rewatch it. I mean,
it makes you see the movie in an entirely different way.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the beauty of this show, that Philip could send a tweet like that, and we could go on a movie tangent.
Oh man, we could do it for the whole.
I know that's
rest
what
of the
this
show right now.
This is it's and believe me, it's not that I have like some sort of thing where I'm like squirrel. I think about these things. When I saw his tweet, I'm like, I could actually do a little segment on that. Because I want to address Shawshank Redemption, bringing up prison.
God, be red.
I know. To be red, exactly. That's great. All right. So I looked over the college football schedule, and you know what? Nothing really pops, but there was a couple of games, TCU going to Texas to play the Longhorns. But Washington is going to be at Oregon. That's another Pac-12 battle. But Alabama and Ole Miss. Now, good Lord, I wish these two teams were just slightly better. Slightly better. Because this could have been a really good big afternoon event. Lane Kiffin was dying for something like this. Dying for a game like this. Where he had a team that was capable of beating Alabama. It's just not going to be the same as beating Alabama. because Alabama's now been beaten twice. Tennessee beat them in Knoxville, and then LSU beat them by going for it in going for the 2-point conversion in the first overtime and beating them in Baton Rouge. Can I bring up something that I know I've kind of beaten to a dead horse, but I want to equate what happened over the weekend to my overall argument that I'm just a little concerned about the college football playoff expansion. Look, you know this if you're an Alabama fan. There are teams in this country that America gets tired of and America roots against, and we root for their failure. And Alabama's been that for a while, right? And you, if you're an Alabama fan, you know it. You know that you're like the Yankees of college football, right? Yankee fans don't want everybody to like them. They don't care that everybody doesn't like them. They don't care that somebody in California is whining about East Coast bias. They wear the Yankees pinstripes with pride, and they couldn't care less if the whole country hates them. Dallas Cowboy fans are like that too. Couldn't care less. They're the Cowboys. Love us, hate us, we don't care. Alabama's gotten that too. Love us, hate us, but you're going to be watching us. That's the way it is. You're going to be seeing us win national championships or competing for national championships because it's what we do. If you expand the college football playoff, even to eight teams, forget 16, just to eight, does it make that moment where Brian Kelly went, screw it, I'm going for two, and everybody went, oh my God, if this works, Alabama's done. If this works, Alabama's done. And then it worked, and that sort of feeling of, oh my God, rammer, hammer, yellow jammer, you just lost Alabama. Like that feeling of it, just thrill. Because in an 8-team playoff, they'd be still in a position to win. They're ranked 9th right now, but they'd still be in a position to fight for that last spot, one of the last spots. And then who would want to play them, right? Like they're still an amazing football team. It's, again, you're talking about two teams at home in an exciting atmosphere where they are going up against just an ocean of noise, and they lose on a 40-yard last-second field goal and a gutsy 2-point conversion call in overtime. That's still an Alabama team that will beat you senseless if you're not careful. Now, some of you may say, well, you know what? Yes, because for every moment I don't get, where I don't get to revel in the you just won't make the playoff now, whoever, I will open the door for some schools and even schools I may root for to have that one or two loss, but playing in the right way now that can now get into this postseason, right? If you look at a team like LSU, for example, that might be one of them. LSU lost twice. Opening game in the Superdome against Florida State, brand new coach. The other one was to a team that at one point was the number one team in the country. That's it. And on their resume is a win against Ole Miss, a win against Alabama. They're playing a lot better. So by expanding it, you give a school like LSU an opportunity to be in there. But that moment, and we've had plenty of them. USC was like that too. When USC was really good with Pete Carroll, that would be like, oh my God, they just lost to Stanford, right? I remember when Jim Harbaugh beat him at Stanford. I thought the world was coming to an end. I couldn't believe what an upset that was at the time. And the mighty USC Trojans went down. I can point to a number of times where Florida with Urban Meyer, or even Steve Spurrier back in the day, they'd go to Auburn, Tigers kick a field goal, bam, done. Goodbye, Heisman, Rex Grossman. Goodbye, national championship. Right, there's been plenty of moments like that. I wonder if we'll miss it because you don't want to give really good schools that you, if you think in college football that you're going to have like a Philadelphia Philly situation, or you may have like in the NFL when a wild card team runs the table and wins the Super Bowl, it's very unlikely that you'll have that. Very, very unlikely that you'll have that. I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm just saying you can't count on that very much. There is a huge gap between where Ohio State is and Georgia all the way down to 16, 15, 14, 12. And so if the only reason you're doing that is just to give schools a chance to sell merchandise that they got in the 2026 NCAA football tournament, like they sell regional finals t-shirts at the NCAA games, fine, that's okay. But when you go down this list of this ranking and you go down to like a 15 seed like Penn State or something like that. They're not going to beat Georgia for the national championship. I don't care what kind of pedigree they have. And they're not going to run through a table of beating Alabama and then beating LSU and then beating Oregon and then beating Georgia. Like, that's not going to happen either. But for every good thing we get, we have to sacrifice something. And I think that's the thing. We have to sacrifice a little bit in order to get what we want. And what we want is, the feeling last night was, Tennessee is deserving of a championship shot. Oregon is deserving of a championship shot. You could make the case USC is. You could make the case LSU is. But you know what? In the current circumstance, they won't get it. But in future circumstances, they will. And if that means that on a magical night in Baton Rouge, if I watch Alabama lose and it does not mean a thing to their postseason status, then that's okay. That's okay. Or if I watch Clemson lose as a guy that went to South Carolina and doesn't like success Clemson has, but will respect the success they do have. But I now know that I'm in a playoff format where that they could easily overcome that. In fact, that's not going to put a blip on the radar at all. That's the sacrifice I make to get more teams that do deserve a shot. Because there's a chance here, Ron, that Tennessee, as good as they are, aren't going to get in this thing. There's a chance.
Yeah.
There is a chance.
There's a very real chance because in order for them to be in the SEC championship, Georgia has to lose.
Yep. Georgia has to lose twice.
Georgia has to lose twice.
And they're not going to.
Yeah.
So Tennessee, though, they have to hope TCU loses. And they have to hope Ohio State or Michigan that there is one team that they are better in the committee's eye than the loser of the game that they have. They have to hope that what they've done with their resume, and their resume is fantastic, but that the committee that has always liked Ohio State, has always liked Michigan, and the polls have not always liked Tennessee at the beginning of the season, that they will say, you know what, though? You are better than the loser of that game in late November. And if that's the case, they could get in. They could get in. But if Oregon is a one-loss Pac-12 champion, find me the argument where they deserve not to go over a Tennessee team that's home on championship weekend. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult. And there's more and more pressure of these universities, university presidents and these conference commissioners they can't influence directly, but they saying, hey, look, we're putting on these conference football games because you told us that was valuable. You told the Big 12 it was valuable, and now it is valuable, and now you're telling us it isn't. If Oregon wins the Pac-12 with one loss, and that loss is to Georgia at the beginning of the season, and you put in Tennessee ahead of Oregon, who has to play that extra game to win the Pac-12 title, you just nullified everything that you have ever said all those years where you told everybody championship games really, really, really matter. Because if a team can have that Saturday off and sit back and just put their arms up and feet up and wait for the phone call, and you give them that phone call, what does that mean down the line? Was Oregon better off staying home? Right? It really does. It really will make a difference. We'll come back, wrap up the hour. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, as we continue on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Good Wednesday morning. We've got Throwback Thursday tomorrow, and gearing me up to the end of the week. So I was talking about this earlier. The pageantry of the release of the teams. I don't know. I know you can make anything a TV show. And listen, if you're a TV producer, you probably should make these things a TV show. It's better than just throwing it out there. If you can make a little bit of money on it, make a little money on it. But I don't know. Doesn't it feel a little like if you were on the committee, wouldn't you feel a sense of like regalism or whatever that's called, that feeling of royalty?
Yeah.
Like bum, bum, bum. The committee has decreed.
You would want a town crier.
You would, right? Fourth team in the playoff, TCU. and everybody goes crazy.
I'd want someone to come out there with a scroll and go, hear ye, hear ye.
The number one team in the nation is Georgia. And by the way, if you're going to do it in more of a British-y accent.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Do it like medieval England.
I mean, you got to come up with like little taglines too. The pride of the South.
Right. The pride of the South. Athens' own. Canine loving. Georgia Bulldogs. Exactly. That's how you should do it.
And then trumpets.
Exactly. Speaking of trumpets, Edwin Diaz signed a huge deal with the Mets.
He did.
I think I forgot to mention that this week. So the Narcos trumpets will be played at Citi Field now for a while. He's getting $20 million a year.
Yep.
$20 million a year as a closer. That's...
Because here's the deal. You want to know why it's that much? I would say maybe half of that is for baseball.
Right.
The other half is because of the trumpets.
That's probably true. When I was 15 years old, I washed dishes at a restaurant, and I think I got paid minimum wage, like, at that time was like $3.75 an hour or something, right? My son was working in a restaurant. He says that the dishwashers there are making like $17 an hour, right? That's an amazing discrepancy. Can you imagine being like Raleigh Fingers and Dennis Eckersley? And a closer's making $20 million a year.
How about?
And you were one of the best at that position of all time.
Let's go with two Hall of. I mean, let's go with more recently, like Mariano Rivera.
Mariano Rivera,
greatest ever. He never made $20 million a year.
Exactly.